Welcome in to the newest edition of the Just In Time Sports Podcast. I am your owner and host, Justin Jackson, and this week's episode, we'll be discussing the Super Bowl and what's going down there, and we'll also be talking about the most insane NBA trade deadline in a very long time. Now, don't forget to like, rate, and subscribe to the Just In Time Sports Podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And also, don't forget to like, rate, and subscribe to the pod, like I just said. And don't forget to follow at J-Time Sports. I repeat, at J-Time Sports for all of your breaking news and updates. JTS. Now, sit back and get ready to learn something.
Yeah. Just In Time Sports.
Life is good. Life is good.
Look. This is Just In Time Sports. Come and get your weekly takes. His opinion from the heart. He can never show you fake. If you winning or you losing, he gon' tell it to you straight. How we talking basketball without a Jordan Brown debate? If you got the hottest takes, you better come and make your case. If you win a couple games, he might even show you grace. JTS on every platform, we growing adaptation. Numbers going off the charts, we create the separation. Louisiana till I die is where I'm from, I can't replace it. So people minds are obtuse, but I like to be adjacent. Giving my opinion like I'm Nick Wright or I'm Jason. ESPN better watch out cause I'm coming for the spaceship. We even tweeting on Twitter, you can meet us in the spaces. Highlight clips of sports news, yeah, you gotta embrace it. We never had it easy, we just came from the pavement. I might be controversial, but I like to make my statements. This is Just In Time Sports, come and get your weekly takes. His opinion from the heart, he can never show you fake.
He can never show you fake.
Look, if you winning or you losing, he gon' tell it to you straight.
He gon' tell it to you, he gon' tell it to you, he gon' tell it to you.
This is Just In Time Sports, come and get your weekly takes.
Come and get it.
He gon' tell it to you straight, to you straight.
Welcome into the show. Welcome into season 6, episode 6 of the Just In Time Sports Podcast. I am your owner and host, Justin Jackson. I'm trying out some new equipment here, starting to upgrade the podcast game a little bit, get some new stuff. So apologies ahead of time if it's a little weird. This will be a late evening Insta release show, not something I'm typically known to do. However, in this particular scenario, I feel like it is necessary because I wanted to make sure as many bombs had gone off as humanly possible in the NBA and the WNBA. Now, we're going to touch on the W just really quickly. I know you guys are here for the NBA, some of you. But for those of you who enjoy the W, really quickly, we've had some bombs in the W as well. I'll start off with Alyssa Thomas being moved to the Phoenix Mercury. She was a cord player. So in the NBA, in the WNBA, for my NBA and NFL folks, think of it more like a franchise tag or like a player option or like a team option. Think of it, the franchise tag in the NFL or a team option in the NBA where that team still has your rights and they can agree to trade you. Now, a lot of times in WNBA, if a core player wants to move, they are moved. Similar to a player on a franchise tag or an NBA player in the last year of his contract, if he wants to move, he's able to be moved. But the core restriction means only the team can move you. Brittany Griner in free agency went to the Atlanta Dream. So one of the biggest free agent signings in league history, especially pure free agency, as Brittany Griner, an absolute no-brainer Hall of Famer, goes to the Atlanta Dream to partner with their young crew, specifically Ryan Howard. So that's going to be a very good ball club. Satu Sabale was traded. She was another cord player, but she made it very clear she had no interest in returning to the Dallas Wings. So the Dallas Wings made a trade with the Phoenix Mercury and the Indiana Fever. The Mercury end up with Satu Sabale, Kalani Brown, and Sfiji Uzun. The Indiana Fever ended up with Sophie Cunningham of the 19th overall pick. And the Dallas Wings acquire Ty Harris, Nelissa Smith, the 8th overall pick, and the rights to Kiki Herbert Harrigan, who has announced that she won't play in the WNBA again this season. But that was the bombs for the most part in the W. I mean, there were some others. Dejanay Carrington was traded to the Dallas Wings, so her and her longtime companion Alyssa Smith are on the same basketball team again. And the Indiana Fever continued to impress as they also picked up Dawana Bonner. So a move that many people thought was going to be connected in terms of Dawana Bonner was going to go wherever her wife Alyssa Thomas goes. They ended up in separate cities again, and they were both on Connecticut last season. Many people thought, especially when Alyssa Thomas ended up in Phoenix, because originally Dawana Bonner was a Mercury, that she was going to find her way into Phoenix and retire there. Alas, that was not the case. But that was my WNBA minute. Couldn't help myself there. I'm a huge WNBA fan, so I couldn't allow it to just go untalked about at all on the show. Of course, the Jewel Loy trade really got it started, but that happened a while before. But like I said, of course, I couldn't just let it ride with no discussion at all on the show. It wouldn't be me. It wouldn't be the Just in Time Sports Podcast, as we are huge supporters of the WNBA on this show. But let's get into the NBA. Let's get into a lot of the drama. Let's get into a lot of the stuff that is happening on the show. So as you guys know, about a week ago, 6 days ago, a bomb goes off in the middle of the night. It's the Luka Anthony Davis trade, and we've had a lot of maneuvering and movement since then. But just to give you guys a reminder, the Lakers ended up receiving Luka Doncic, Markieff Morris, and Maxi Kleber. The Dallas Mavericks ended up with Anthony Davis, Max Christie, and a 2029 first-round pick, courtesy of the Lakers. And the Utah Jazz ended up receiving Jalen Hood-Schifino, a Clippers second-round pick, and a Mavericks second-round pick. Now, what makes this interesting is one of the things that came out was that Danny Ainge had no idea, which tells you the level of secrecy involved in this trade, because Danny Ainge is always involved in the trade because he always knows everything. And the fact that he only found out 30 minutes ahead of time tells you the level of secrecy that Nico Harrison and Rob Pelinka exercised in this scenario. Now, it has been well received throughout Lakerland as a huge W of a trade. The national media is still poo-pooing it. You've got guys like Charles Barkley saying, oh yeah, the Mavericks can win a title and the Lakers didn't do anything. And it's like, the Lakers acquired a top three player in the world. You're telling me that somehow the Mavericks, who lost said top three player in the world, are in a better position than the team that got them? I'm like, all right, like, we get it, Charles. You're anti-LeBron. We understand it. We get it, Shaq. You're pro big man. But, like, let's use common sense here. Adding a top three player in the world by just definition can't be worse than losing the very same player. So let's use our common sense here. But that bomb goes off, right? And so most people will say, okay, all right, let's breathe. But I was hearing smoke about De'Aaron Fox, and I kept hearing it. A day later, the bomb explodes. In a three-team deal involving the Sacramento Kings along with the Chicago Bulls and the Spurs, the De'Aaron Fox finds himself on the Spurs. The full details: the San Antonio Spurs received De'Aaron Fox and Jordan McLaughlin. The Chicago Bulls picked up Zach Collins, Trey Jones, Kevin Herter, and they get their 2025 first-round pick back from San Antonio, a very valuable asset, as the Bulls can end up a top-10 team in a very good draft. And then the Sacramento Kings pick up Zach LaVine, City, Sosoka? Or Kasoka, I don't know that guy at all. Three first round picks, which was 2025 from Charlotte, 2027 of San Antonio, and 2031 from Minnesota, and three second round picks. Remember, the Dallas Mavericks got one pick total for Luka Doncic. The San Antonio Spurs and the Sacramento Kings, picked up six for De'Aaron Fox. He's Anthony Davis worth four picks. I mean, that's the only difference in the trades to me. Is AD worth four picks plus, to me, a Zach LaVine? Because the City fella and Max Christie kind of cancel in the grand scheme of life. So is Anthony Davis, is Anthony Davis worth two first round picks, three second round picks, and the talent gap of Zach LaVine to Max Christie? If the answer is no, then that means the Sacramento Kings got more for De'Aaron Fox than the Dallas Mavericks did for Luka Doncic. Yeah, Nico Harrison, it's a bad trade, Now, I do think people are going way too far. There's Nico Harrison's hired full-time security. There have been death threats. Security's beat up in the building. There's a lot of craziness happening around Dallas. All of that's ridiculous. At the end of the day, people, it's basketball. Yes, it's a sport we love. Yes, it's what we talk about. Yes, we live and breathe and die. And I'm going to talk about my team later, which is the Pelicans, making how they're making moves at this point. But at the end of the day, people, it's basketball. A decision was made. If Dallas wins the title, everyone's going to praise Nico Harrison. I mean, it's just that simple. Those same people who are giving them death threats outside of maybe Slovenians are going to praise Nico Harrison for an all-time move if he trades Luka Doncic and they win a title while Anthony Davis is on the team. And we spoke about it with the Doncic trade. A lot of it is a bet against Luka. If Luka ever wins the title, you lost. Even if you win one and he wins one, you can call it at best a split, but most likely people are going to say you lost. So that's very interesting there. But anyway, back to the De'Aaron Fox situation. So that puts Fox and Wimby together, and Fox already had his first game with the Spurs. It looked as spectacular as you would imagine it would look. And then we had an NFL, a couple NFL bombs. We had a Caleb Martin trade to Dallas as they're trying to fill in their roster around Anthony Davis. But then we start hearing smoke. Actually, no, I'm going to save that because whatever. So we're going to save that for a little while. But then another trade goes off. Milwaukee Bucks and Washington Wizards agree to a trade, with the Wizards receiving Chris Middleton, AJ Johnson, and the right to a pick swap. And the Milwaukee Bucks receiving Kyle Kuzma, Patrick Baldwin, and multiple second round picks. I believe it was two or three multiple second round selections. So Chris Middleton and Kyle Kuzma end up being swapped. What's the situation here? Why do you move a Chris Middleton? Why do you pick up a Kyle Kuzma? You move a Chris Middleton because it was time. The past couple of seasons, we've gone into those seasons saying, okay, you got Giannis, you have Dame. You pick up Dame in the middle of last season, but you have Dame entering this season. If only, when it comes to Chris Middleton. If only he can revitalize some of that prowess that he had before. If only he could stay healthy. You find yourself playing the if-only game with Chris Middleton, and it's a situation where the Bucks couldn't do anymore. Instead, you go because he lost his defensive ability. And a lot of times I've noticed with two-way players, with NBA players in general, they lose defensive ability because a lot of time defense involves athleticism and want to. And if I already know I have to conserve energy, I'm much more valuable trying to score the ball than trying to stop you from scoring. So a lot of times players will lose that defensive intensity because now they're just trying to basically match their matchup in points. So if I'm playing a great score and instead of me taking away 10 or 12 of his points, I've got to add 8 or 9 of mine, you know, to try and cancel out his production. But now you're bringing a Kyle Kuzma, who's never been anybody's defender, but he's a champion. He's been in championship locker rooms. He's been around the greatest player of all time, in my opinion. He's been around one of the best big men of all time. And so he's been in those scenarios. He's been in those locker rooms. And he's done it in L.A. So the pressure in Milwaukee is a little different. It's a little bit nicer than some of the pressure he's felt within L.A. I think it's a good move for Kyle Kuzma. I really do. The Sacramento Kings were not done. They ended up bouncing newly acquired city Sokoko. I can't pronounce it. I'm sorry. To the Washington Wizards, who were just involved, obviously, with Chris Middleton. And they the Kings pick up Jonas Valanciunas and two second-round picks. So the Wizards trade Big Val, to the Kings for the city fella and two second-round picks. The Kings were not done. And then a big bomb. Not as big as the Luka bomb, but the Jimmy Butler bomb finally goes off. In one of the bigger trades I've seen in a long, long time. One of the bigger trades that's happened in the NBA in a long time as far as the number of teams. That was involved in this trade. So here's the situation. So the Miami Heat ultimately traded Jimmy Butler to the Golden State Warriors. It was a situation for a package that involved Andrew Wiggins, Dennis Schroeder, Kyle Anderson, and a protected first round pick. the Golden State Warriors, then almost immediately agree. And in these situations, they pretty much pre-agree. Agree to a two-year contract extension worth $121 million. The Miami Heat immediately reroute Dennis Schroeder to the Utah Jazz, with Josh Richardson from the Pistons getting routed to the Warriors for Lindy Waters III. And then P.J. Tucker ultimately gets redirected to the Miami Heat, with Kyle Anderson, who was supposed to get redirected to the Toronto Raptors, but that part of the deal ends up falling apart, and he is not rerouted to the Toronto Raptors after all. So that is what happens with Jimmy Butler. Now, what's interesting with the Jimmy Butler trade is there was previous reporting that he had blocked a trade to the Warriors. Now, I think they had a case to do with the money. And I think up until that point, his representation was probably telling him he could make his way to Phoenix, which was the goal from Jump Street. But I think that involved Kevin Durant being moved back to Golden State, which was something that was deemed literally untenable. Kevin Durant rejected that premise outright. He rejected the thought of even going back to Golden State outright. It was going to be a pretty interesting deal, in which case Jimmy Butler would get to Phoenix. A lot of assets would go to Miami, including Andrew Wiggins. And then Kevin Durant would find himself in Golden State. Again, Kevin Durant rejected the theory of possibly even attempting to go back to Golden State. And ultimately, that was the deciding factor in Jimmy Butler finding his way into Golden State, with Andrew Wiggins still finding his way into Miami. A lot of stuff been going on with Andrew Wiggins. It was a somber feeling, according to Ohm, who works for ESPN. It was a somber feeling, according to him, around the locker room when Steve Kerr went in and talked to Andrew and tell him what was going on with the situation. One of those things you don't think about when it comes down to player acquisition is the player themselves. I mean, you got guys like Dennis Schroeder who compared it to modern slavery. Let's not go that far. But piggybacking off of that, Dennis Schroeder was traded every day this week. He was traded Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday to four different places, obviously. So, absolutely. I mean, you know, you really don't have any control over your situation most of the time, especially if you're not a star-level player. Quick kudos to Lonzo Ball. He picks up a two-year, $20 million contract extension. Many people thought he was going to be moved at the deadline. Instead, him and Chicago agreed to an extension. Now, this doesn't mean anything. He could be traded by August 6th or 6th or 5th because of the six-month signing trade restriction. He could be moved in 6 months. But he will, at least through the summer, remain a Chicago Bull and look to be their point guard of the future. Now, one of the deals and one of the situations that was always interesting was what New Orleans would do. And I'm a Pelicans fan, so this is pretty interesting to me. Is what would New Orleans do? Because New Orleans was right above the luxury tax. And at the time, it was going to be an $18 million check that the Pelicans were basically about to forfeit if and when, you know, they decide to stay over the luxury tax limit. Myself, Bobby Marks, some other people were saying there's no way the Pelicans don't make a trade to get under the tax. The most obvious person is Brandon Ingram. You send Brandon Ingram out, you send him to a team with cap space. That way you can acquire less than what you sent out, and you're under the tax. Also, it keeps you under the tax for next season, so you avoid the repeater tax. Again, that was the most obvious person. But the Pelicans at some point moved Daniel Tice. So now Daniel Tice gets moved and the Pelicans come under the tax. Okay. So now in my head, I'm like, okay, they might keep Ingram now because Tice was moved and you're under the tax. So what's really, so I guess outside of not being stuck to paying his extension, why move him at this point? If it's a tax reason, you can still get your $18 million check. It ends up being an $11.2 million check. But you can end up getting your, you know, $18 million check at the time without, and keep Brandon Ingram until the summer, where you can use a sign and trade as a leverage. Especially because most teams that want to acquire him would need to move out like money. But bomb goes off. The New Orleans Pelicans trade Brandon Ingram to the Toronto Raptors for Bruce Brown, Kelly Olynyk, a first round pick in 2026, courtesy of Indiana, and a second round pick. Now, you're probably wondering, as a Pelicans fan, how do I feel? I feel really good about this trade. At first, I was like, okay, we didn't get anything back. But I realized that could be the genius in the trade. Bruce Brown is a human real-life trade exception. When he signed a big, mostly non-guaranteed deal in Denver. And it was thought of around the league as a real-life, breathing trade exception. And that's kind of how it's been treated. New Orleans is going to get off the contract after this season. He made the money work for the Brandon Ingram situation. Kelly Olynyk is actually a really good rotational center. And then I say we have an additional first-round pick in 2026. And then we pick up an additional second-round pick as well. They said, I'm enjoying the move. You basically traded a three-year, $144 million contract. I mean, that's literally what happened. We traded a massive contract for a guy that you nor I think is worth it. So kudos to David Griffin there. And they say you still pick up your check. But then the Lakers came back and made a second trade. They trade Dalton Connect, Cam Reddish, and their last tradable first-round pick, the one in 2031, completely unprotected, and a 2030 pick swap to the Charlotte Hornets for Mark Williams, who is a rising star, a rising center for the Charlotte Hornets. First of all, he's 7'2", with a 9'9" standing reach. For context, Victor Wembanyama has a standing reach of 9'7". So Mark Williams' standing reach is actually 2 inches higher than Victor Wembanyama. When Mark Williams plays over 28 minutes, he's a 20-12 with a block and a half kind of guy. The problem is he's never played 50 games in a season. So the Lakers are incredibly confident in their staff in order to work on his body. They have LeBron James, the ultimate body guy. And they are making the bet that they are able to keep him on the floor. Which, if that's the case, the Lakers go from one of the worst defensive teams to at least middle of the pack with Mark Williams being behind them. Then there were some other minor trades. Reggie Jackson and Jared Butler get swapped for the Toronto Raptors. Also trade Davion Mitchell to the Miami Heat for PJ Tucker, another human trade exception, a second round pick and some cash. Yusef Nurkic, who's been going through several things with the Phoenix Suns organization, he gets traded to the Charlotte Hornets along with the first round pick for Cody Martin and Vasily Micic. And then my last big trade of the trade deadline was DeAndre Hunter, who's an incredibly underrated player. He gets traded from the Hawks to the Cleveland Cavaliers for Caris LeVert, George Niang, 3 second-round picks, and 2 pick swaps. To me, that is a very humongous trade. That's a championship-level trade. Because odds are, I would start him at 3. So now 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 is all-star-ish and minimum level players. We know what Jetty Osman is. I would have DeAndre Hunter starting. So it'd be Garland, Mitch, DeAndre Hunter, Evan Mobley, and Jared Allen, and play basketball. Because he's a very long, rangy defender. He can also put the ball in the hole and score. Marcus Smart is moved to the Washington Wizards. Pretty much as one of those draft capital moments. And then James Wiseman was traded to the Toronto Raptors. Whew. What a trade deadline. What a trade deadline that was. To say it was a fun one would be an understatement. We got a lot of use out of our new graphic. But to say it was a fun one would be an understatement. But some big news coming out after the deadline. The thing that happened today was Ben Simmons and the Brooklyn Nets are negotiating a buyout. Now, what's weird about his buyout is they're not going to finalize it until he finds an agreement with a new team. So he's going to continue to get paid by the Nets his full salary. And then once they figure out an agreement with a new team, then he will request a buyout. It will be granted, and the new team will almost immediately sign him. So that was the most interesting thing as well. Ben Simmons still has a lot of positive reputations around the league. Long range defender, can really pass the ball, can really cause havoc on the wing as far as with his length and versatility and athleticism, can cause absolute havoc on the ring, on the wing. And then Kevin Durant in this situation to me was jobbed, and I have little to no doubt he won't be on the Phoenix Suns next year. He was not brought in to consideration with trades. He was not told about trades. He was not even told about his trade. He was blindsided, despondent regarding to his apparent name being mentioned in trade discussions, his name being mentioned in conversations regarding a Jimmy Butler, with his name being mentioned and, you know, going back to the Warriors. I mean, no wonder he basically said, screw you, I'm not going to help you, after the way he feels like he was treated, which you get no argument from me. You are the best player on the Phoenix Suns. If you're not the best player in the organization's eyes, you're no worse than second. But similar to Golden State, Devin Booker was born and raised there in basketball since. You're an implant. You're a mercenary. Kevin Durant's the best mercenary in the history of basketball. Now, what I don't get is, if I'm Phoenix, I'm trying to shed salary. I'm not trying to add Jimmy Butler's 121, because at that point, I might well just keep Kevin Durant. But, you know, they're going to pay $152 million in luxury taxes this year. Insane, right? But, you know, you go through a battle every single day with a group of guys, and you love that place and whatever, and then you hear your name in trade rumors for a guy who, let's be honest, hadn't done what you can do. So that makes it difficult in terms of interpersonal relationships with Kevin. He's already not the most, let's call it, social guy of all time. So to put this level of scrutiny and jokeability and stuff on him makes it difficult. Makes it very difficult. But, you know, so a lot is happening in the NBA. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander keeps dropping 50. But other than that, a lot's happening in the NBA. We'll definitely keep you guys updated as we enter into the home stretch before the playoffs. Now, up next, we're going to jump into the Super Bowl and talk about what's going down with the Shield. Welcome back into the show, and now we're on to the Super Bowl, as we have reached Super Bowl week. Yes, NFL fans, we have finally made it. We have made it all the way to the Super Bowl. It has been a long, arduous journey. As you guys know, we typically start the NFL coverage. Oh my God, I mean, we might be out of the NFL for what, 3 weeks to a month? And then we're right back in it. You know, we're basketball heavy at that point, but we are out of the NFL coverage for about a month. Super Bowl ends. We take a couple of weeks off, so this probably be the last show. Well, I'll probably do a Super Bowl reaction show, either right after the game, or I'll do one on Monday. You guys are here no later than Tuesday, and then I'll probably take a couple of weeks off, kind of get adjusted to being in basketball. And then when we come back, we'll probably be 2-3 shows, and the NFL free agency will be on and popping. So that's kind of the schedule, the outlook over the next month or so. Probably no later than Mardi Gras, or rather right after Mardi Gras, will we have a show, or will we have an NFL, you know, heavy show again with free agency, so on and so forth. But The Super Bowl is here. The NOLA Super Bowl is here. It's the Kansas City Chiefs, fresh off their back-to-back Super Bowl championships. They're coming for another. They're coming to be the first team to win three in a row. They're already the first team since the 03-04 Patriots to go back-to-back. Now they look to be the first team ever to win three Super Bowls in a row. Now, the NFL's had three-peat champions before. Hell, they've had a five-peat, I believe, at one point. But the Super Bowl champions have never been three in a row. And then the Philadelphia Eagles, they're back, right? Last time they were here, they faced the Kansas City Chiefs. So this is a familiar opponent for them as far as, hey, we've been here before with them. They've been here before with us. So now you've got the Super Bowl champions back at it again with the Chiefs facing the opponent of one of the reasons why they have the Super Bowl that they have is the Philadelphia Eagles, as they were able to come back and defeat them in the Super Bowl. Quick update on the Jacks Pack before we move on. We are now 6-6 because we went 0-2 in conference championship weekend, and I changed my mind last minute on the Chiefs. That would have guaranteed me a winning playoff, but I ended up going with the Bills. Sadly, had it, not gonna lie, felt like I had it there, blew it right at the end. That hurts. We had it 2.5. It's just a lot of pain there, honestly. But the Kansas City Chiefs end up beating the Bills by more than three. And the Eagles, again, as we talked about in the last time, with the football, absolutely steamrolled the Washington Commanders. But we were 0-2. We are 6-6. This game is an even point spread. So simply picking the winner correctly guarantees me a winning playoff. Guarantees me winning regular season and a winning playoff. Something that hasn't happened in a few years, actually. Winning both, having two winning seasons. So, but let's get back to the game. I mean, this game has a lot of history in it. For Patrick Mahomes, you would have the greatest start to a career, which he arguably has anyway, but the greatest start to a career that has ever happened. You would have started seven seasons and you would have had four Super Bowls. Seven seasons, four Super Bowls. For context, Tom Brady didn't win his fourth Super Bowl till year 12, 13, because he won three out of his first four, and then he went on a 10-year drought. So it took year 14 for Tom Brady to get to ring number four. Patrick Mahomes looking for ring number four in year seven. Absolutely insane start to his career. The worst season he's ever had winning wise, he lost in the conference championship game. This is his fifth Super Bowl appearance. He's looking for ring number four. The only Super Bowl he's ever lost, he lost to the real GOAT, Tom Brady. But as far as start to a career, you can't get much more of an insane start, especially winning wise at the quarterback position, than your first 7 years. You're potentially walking away with four Super Bowls in five appearances. I mean, absolutely, again, just ridiculous level of winning. But the Philadelphia Eagles on the other side, man, that team is no slouch. And you've heard all the coverage all week. I'm not gonna beat you to death with Super Bowl coverage. You've heard it all week. But the Philadelphia Eagles have one of, if no, no, correction. I'm going to backtrack. The Philadelphia Eagles have the best roster in pro football. It ain't close. The best player on the field, I give you, is Patrick Mahomes. The second best player on the field, Chris Jones or Saquon Barkley. Players 3 through 12 might all play for the Eagles, with Joe Tooney being the one outlier. And because he's forced to play tackle, he might not be it anymore either. That's insane. If you look at position groups in this game, the best position group in the game is quarterback, which, again, has to go to the Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs by virtue of him being in it. The second best position group has to be the Philadelphia Eagles defensive line, followed by the Philadelphia Eagles running backs, followed by the Philadelphia Eagles. Okay, Kansas City Chiefs offensive line, then the Philadelphia Eagles receiving core. Then you start going to the Chiefs. Like, the Philadelphia Eagles have the most complete and best roster in the league. It's not conjecture. It's not an opinion. That's a fact. I've made reference a few times on this show. It's literally like Noah's Ark over there. They've got two of everything. They've got two good receivers, AJ Brown, Devontae Smith. They've got two great nose tackles, Jalen Carter and the other big one. I can't think of his name right now. They've got two great defense tackles. They've got two crashy linebackers in Zach Bond and the other guy. They have a 2,000-yard rusher in Saquon Barkley. It is ridiculous. They have talent everywhere. Even their offensive line, losing Alain Johnson, losing Jason Kelsey. Another type of Lane Johnson, losing to Jason Kelsey. They have just kept chugging along. They are ridiculously talented. And even Jalen Hurts is a dual threat. Hell, he's got two ways to beat you, throwing and running. But the Kansas City Chiefs are the Kansas City Chiefs. I spoke about it before, and I don't think this can be reiterated. They have made it to the Super Bowl 5 out of 7 years in Patrick Mahomes' quarterback tenure. They have won the Super Bowl 3 out of those years. Well, if you don't count this trip, 3 out of 4 chances they've been in the Super Bowl, they've won it with only one loss to Brady. The previous 6 years before this year, they went to six conference championship games, winning 4 of them. They've lost one to Brady, and they lost one to Burrow, both on late game comebacks. Brady in overtime, Burrow at the end of the fourth quarter. In the year Burrow loses to the Rams, in the year Brady wins for Tampa. I'm sorry, in the year that Brady goes and wins the last Super Bowl in New England. Absolutely ridiculous level of complete dominance as far as winning in situations, as far as winning in just the draft. They've hit in free agency. They've obviously hit on the coaching staff. Remember when going to that Texans game and I said, man, every Chiefs game this year looks the same? Every single Chiefs game looks the same. They come out, they go out, and they put a hell of a first drive together. It's like you can tell Andy Reid and the crew are cooking that drive up, and they go and they put a hell of a first drive together. And then the offense slows down for the rest of the game, but the defense never gives up a lot. They never go down really far. And then that fourth quarter, they're going to win that fourth quarter by double digits. They're going to win it 13-3. They're going to win it 14-0. They're going to win it 10-0. They're going to win the fourth quarter, 16-3. They're just going to win the fourth quarter by double digits, and they're going to escape you by 4 to 5 points. And it happens almost every single time. And you're going to feel like you outplayed them. And you're going to look at your numbers and say, we did. And you're going to say, oh, man, there's 3 plays that we win this game by 18 plus, and we lost it by 5. And you don't know how it happened to you, because it has happened to everyone. They continually find ways to win games. It is remarkably frustrating. It is stupendously annoying. It is frustratingly cool. It is mind-blowingly annoying as they find ways literally over and over and over and over and over and over and over. They find ways to win the game. It's infuriating. But kudos to them for still finding ways to win games and for finding ways in order to continue to be on top. But I've given you enough of the back and forth. I've given you enough of the conjecture. I've told you that the point spread is E, which means it's even. No 0.5, no 1, no nothing. It's a dead spread even. There is no point in betting the point spread. You get equal money for both if your sports book is smart. The over-under simply is 48.5. The money, I think I've seen on several sites where even the money line was both teams were negative. This is about as dead heat of a Super Bowl as we have seen in a very long time. Now, the initial spread was Chiefs -2. So it's been bet all the way down to even money. Insane, right? That many people are on the side of the Philadelphia Eagles. It swung 2 to 2.5 points in many sports books. That kind of swing doesn't happen. It swung that far. But now it's time to pick a winner. And I've been battling with this since they came together. One point I was Chiefs 1,000%. You couldn't have told me anything but the Chiefs are going to get a three-peat. And then I said, man, it's hard to beat a team twice. It's damn sure hard to beat a team twice in a Super Bowl. So I went to the Philadelphia Eagles. I said, man, Saquon Barkley is going to control this game time possession. They're going to have a couple of clever plays from Kellen Moore. This is basically his, I'm going to get New Orleans, get ready to see this on a regular basis because I'm going to be the head coach of the Saints. So New Orleans, get ready to see this. Get used to the locker room. Ironically, they will be in the home locker room. You know, what's pretty funny about that? They're going to be in the home locker room. So Kellen Moore, you know, move your stuff into the head coach office and just leave it there. Because that's going to be your office. You know, I mean, the Super Bowl is Sunday. They'll probably announce him as it'll probably leak he's the coach Sunday night, early Monday morning. He'll probably get formally announced as the head coach no later than Tuesday or Wednesday. He'll give a press conference on Thursday. I mean, like, literally, I hope he brought his stuff. Like, that's the level of, you know, he's going to be a head coach. He's going to be the head coach of New Orleans. I hope he brought his bags and his family and so on and so forth so they don't have to, like, go back and get any of that stuff. But he's going to be a head coach, right? He's going to be the head coach of the New Orleans Saints, and I think this is his chance to show off some of that talent. If you're Nick Sirianni, you've got to correct things that you gave up last time. I think they got a little lax in coverage. They went to stop the big play. And the Chiefs have an amazing ability. I give credit to Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes for this. They have an amazing ability to hurry up, to get a lot of plays in a short amount of time and score. So, like, most people, man, a minute left, you got to go 80 yards. They're looking for bombs, you know, 20-yard chunks, 15-yard chunks. The Chiefs have an ability to go 7, 6, 12, 7, 8, 9, 5, 3, 10, 12, 20, touchdown. And you're like, they did that in a minute. And, you know what I'm saying, they got 9 to 10 plays off. And they can, you know, they have an ability when needed to have a 9-play, 80-yard drive for a touchdown in a minute and some change. And it's just it's a freakish ability, and they could just do it, right? It reminds me of when the Patriots, if you left more than a minute and a half on the clock, a minute and 10 on the clock, you know, heaven forbid Brady had a timeout, you were shaking, basically, because he's coming and he's going to do it. And that's what the Chiefs have the ability to do. And I sit here and, you know, a little behind the scenes here, I don't have a winner on the paper. I literally have winner question mark. I mean, I agree with the sports books. I agree with the lines. I have no idea. This is one of the more even Super Bowls in a long time. You have a Chiefs team that you just feel like they're going to do it again. You have a Chiefs team that you're like, man, 3 in a row. If anyone's going to do it, it's going to be them. You have a Chiefs team that always wins the big game, that always figures it out, that always somehow, some way, has an ability to win the game. And it just doesn't make sense. You just don't get it. But at the same time, this Eagle team is hungry. They have a lot of guys who just want to battle, who just want to go to war with Patrick Mahomes, who just want to go at it with the Kansas City Chiefs, especially because a lot of these very guys feel like they got robbed and they, you know, blew an opportunity, a golden chance to have jewelry on their finger already. But in this game, I've faded the Chiefs a lot. I have. I've faded the Chiefs a lot this season. Some of it has worked, especially in point spread. Some of it has not. I'm going to go with the Kansas City Chiefs to win their third Super Bowl in a row. So my official just-in-time sports pick is the Kansas City Chiefs win their third Super Bowl in a row. As a matter of fact, I'm going to mark it on the page right now. Like I said, as of right this second, it was not on the page, but it is officially circled on my notes that the Kansas City Chiefs will win their third Super Bowl in a row, and we will get endless conversation of Patrick Mahomes being the GOAT because he'd be the first one to ever do it. He would have 4 Super Bowls before the age of 30. He'd have, I believe, 4 Super Bowl MVPs as well. He'd have 2 to 3 regular season MVPs. He would have the greatest start to a football career that has ever existed. And admittedly, who am I to tell him that? Who am I to say anything about anyone at that point? Now, would it shock me if Philly gets the win? No. But as of right now, I've got the Kansas City Chiefs. But let's move on to immortals. Those who have busts in the Canton Pro Football Hall of Fame. In the smallest class since 2005, there were only 4 inductees into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Now, I didn't know you could go that small. Like, I know baseball's had years, they don't induct anybody. Like, because baseball, you have to have like 80% of the ballots, something like that. And they've had years where they don't induct anyone. And that's a really weird, like, concept. You don't induct anybody. But baseball classes are typically 2, to five people. They don't have 8, 9, 10 people classes. They have from 2 to 5 usually. And then, like I said, there's been a couple years recently they didn't induct anybody. But this, I thought football, I thought you had to have 5 current years, 5 current and 2 classes. I thought like 7 or 6 or 7 was always the number. But they end up going with 4 this season. The Hall of Fame end up being Antonio Gates, tight end of the Chargers, Eric Allen, who was a cornerback, Jared Allen, a defensive end primarily. I remember him from the Vikings, and Sterling Sharp. Sterling Sharp, before his injury, he had a neck injury that forced him to retire. Sterling Sharp was on path to break a lot of Jerry Rice's records. Now, would the longevity have held up to where he physically just caught Jerry Rice in numbers? Maybe not. But Sterling Sharp is one of those, was one of those receivers. He won, I think, 2 triple crowns or something like that. Was absolutely an amazing receiver in the early days of Brett Favre in Green Bay. Ends up clearing the way for your Donald Drivers and et cetera in Green Bay later with Brett Favre. But Sterling Sharp was the guy. Remember Shannon Sharp, his Hall of Fame production was like, I'm not even the best football player in my own family. Sterling Sharp should be in the Hall of Fame. Terrell Davis opened the door. So when Terrell Davis got in the Hall of Fame, Shannon Sharp's teammate in Denver, Terrell Davis only played 6 years or 6 or 7 years. But in those 6, 7 years, Terrell Davis has 2,000-yard seasons, and he also has a couple of Super Bowl rings. So while he doesn't have the counts, I don't think he has 10,000 yards rushing. He went for 2,000 twice, and he has 2 rings. Terrell Davis ends up retiring due to concussions. Sterling, like I said, retired because of a neck injury. But in his short 6 or 7 year career, he had a couple of triple crowns. He didn't win a Super Bowl, but he was clearly either the best or second best receiver in the league. He has multiple first-team All-Pros. I mean, honestly, if he had his career and you added 7 years of minimalness, he's a no-brainer. But because of the amount of years he had in the league, people pushed back on it originally. But he's in, and one of the cooler and just wow moments is Shannon Sharp. Sterling was staying over at Shannon's house, and they kind of set this whole little thing up. And then Sterling comes down the stairs, and Shannon says, "Welcome." And Sterling was like, "To your house? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I've been here 1,000 times, dude. Like, to your house?" And then Shannon in his gold jacket says, "No, the Pro Football Hall of Fame." And as you can see, Sterling's like, "Wow. Wow." And it starts to like hit him like he's in. And then Shannon starts breaking down, and Sterling tells him like, "Yo, the proudest professional moment I've ever had was when you got in." And then Shannon was telling him like, "No, this, you don't understand, this feeling of me being able to tell you you're in is he's at his proudest moment." It was one of the brothers, and they both got to sit down, and like Shannon has called Sterling like his father, basically. He was like, "You know, my example of how to do anything was Sterling Sharp." And he said he had his grandfather, of course, but he was like, "My example, especially in adulthood, of how to do anything in the league, how to carry yourself, whatever, was Sterling." And so, you know, absolutely amazing moment for the Sharp brothers, the Sharp family. They become the first set of brothers to ever be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame together. I am sure Shannon's going to fight like hell to get Sterling's bust as close to, if not next to him, as possible. So now when Sterling was like, "Man, his proudest moment was being with Shannon and during that weekend." So now Sterling gets his chance for Shannon to be in Sterling's light. And Sterling be the belle of the ball, especially since it's a small class. Sterling gets to be the belle of the ball while Shannon is riding shotgun. And that, you know, it's dream worthy, right? Like, I can't even think of a pair of brothers in the NBA who made the Basketball Hall of Fame. I'm sure baseball, I don't think, like, a Pro Football Hall of Fame set of siblings, a Pro Hall of Fame of siblings is massively impressive. If they're not the only ones on the list, they're on a very short list. So congratulations. But again, congrats to all the Hall of Famers, Antonio Gates, Eric Allen, Jared Allen, and of course, Sterling Sharp. A couple of near misses, I would assume. I would have added these guys, no doubt about it. Adam Vinatieri is the best kicker of all time, period. There wasn't a drop off. Like, Adam V might have had 1 half of a year where he was off and then he retired. He is simply the best kicker of all time. The best anything of all time needs to be in the Hall of Fame of that sport. He was not in on first ballot. Eli Manning did not get in. Now, Eli, I'm in the debate group of Eli. you have the camp, especially the media. Most of the media comes from New York. That's like, oh my God, Eli Manning was robbed. How was he not in? Eli Manning was very average for most of his career. He doesn't have the all pros. He didn't have the MVPs. He didn't have the Pro Bowls or whatever. But he didn't have the all pros nor the MVPs. He has multiple years of leading the league in picks. He has multiple years of just being flat out bad. And then he has the two Super Bowl runs against Brady. Now, if Eli Manning makes the Super Bowl, Tom Brady's the GOAT. Because the only reason why Eli Manning is in the Super Bowl is because he beat Tom Brady twice in Super Bowls. That's it. That's the only qualification he has to be in the Hall of Fame. But a guy I would have in, no doubt, under the Terrell Davis, Sterling Sharp argument is Luke Kuechly. Luke Kuechly easily was the best linebacker in football for multiple years. He was all-decade linebacker, multiple first-time All-Pro. The only reason he had to retire was due to concussions. So I think under the same law and guidelines that Terrell Davis and Sterling Sharp is getting, I believe Luke Kuechly should be there as well. But now I'm going to quickly run through the NFL awards. We had the NFL awards show just last night. Your MVP is Buffalo Bills quarterback Josh Allen. He becomes just the third player ever to not be first team all pro, but instead to win the league MVP. So just the third player ever, not the first, but he is on a very short list of players to have done this. Offensive player of the year was Philadelphia Eagles running back Saquon Barkley. I think if you're not going to give the MVP to Lamar here, Saquon should be MVP. I'm just going to be honest with you because you can't. Lamar Jackson had an absolutely historic year at the quarterback position. Josh Allen played incredibly well. But to me, Lamar Jackson had the best year at quarterback. If you're not going to give it to Lamar Jackson, it has to be Saquon Barkley. But instead, Saquon gets the everybody else MVP award, which is Offensive Player of the Year, while Josh Allen gets the quarterback award, which is the MVP these days. The Defensive Player of the Year, a rarity, which is the cornerback position. Pat Surtain II becomes the first cornerback since Stephon Gilmore to pick up the Defensive Player of the Year. It is naturally designed for a edge rusher to pick it up, but Pat Surtain II picks it up. Coach of the Year, Minnesota Vikings head coach Kevin O'Connell. A little bit of a shocker here. I remember saying on the show, the Week 18 game between Kevin O'Connell and Dan Campbell's Lions was going to decide who's going to get Coach of the Year. To me, those were the top two. And I just figured that once Dan Campbell, especially completing the sweep over Kevin O'Connell in that moment, had secured the votes. But apparently he did not. I guess a lot of credit was given to Kevin O'Connell for the Sam Darnold resurgence. The Offensive Rookie of the Year, one vote shy of a unanimous, was Jaden Daniels. Now, the vote did go to Brock Bowers. Not mad at it. Brock Bowers had an absolutely historic year at the tight end position. But Jaden Daniels was the clear-cut Offensive Rookie of the Year. And to me, just as clear-cut, Jared Verse wins the Defensive Rookie of the Year as the new linchpin in the Los Angeles Rams pass rush. The Comeback Player of the Year was Joe Burrow. Many people thought it would be Sam Darnold. But also, Joe Burrow wins the quarterback triple crown, or the quarterback crown, passing crown, and just had the worst defense in the history of existence, it feels like. Otherwise, he'd be deep in the playoffs with the amount of yards and touchdowns he put up. But he missed a good chunk of last year with a hand injury. Sam Darnold gets taken out of the race due to the quote-unquote meaning or intent of the award. And so Joe Burrow picks up the Comeback Player of the Year award. But that is all I have for today. Absolutely great show. Thank you guys for rocking with me. This is always a pleasure to do these with you guys. Being able to talk a little NBA, being able to talk a little NFL. I appreciate you guys so much. This is your host, Justin Jackson, signing out.